decade of brains brachiating into brilliance. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 181. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your branch of brabbling braggadocios who brunch on breadsticks and brandies at brasseries.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And no Chris this week. He is off in Boston at the Penny Arcade Expo. But he actually recorded something for us.
We can't keep him down. We can't keep him.
And he specifically told me not to listen to it first. Okay. And so I'm playing this blind. And I don't know what it is. So here I'm going to play it and we'll see what it is.
All right. Okay.
Hello, my fellow Good Job Brainers, and hello to you, home audience. I am not present for the recording sessions this week because I am on the East Coast of these great United States visiting the PAX East Gaming Convention in Boston. But I didn't want to leave you without some trivia, so I would like to tell you about a famous building in downtown Boston. It's technically called the Berkeley Building, but everyone knows it as the old John Hancock Building, since it used to be the offices of the John Hancock Insurance Company. It's a 26-story office building designed with a vertical column of bright lights in its spire. This is actually a weather beacon, and the specific pattern of lights tells you about the coming weather, and you can see it for miles around. The beacon can display red and blue lights, either solid or flashing, and you can remember what pattern means what weather by using the following mnemonic. Steady blue, clear view. Flashing blue, clouds do. Steady red, rain ahead. Flashing red, snow instead. Now, here's a trivia question. If you were to look up and see the old Hancock Tower's weather beacon flashing alternating red and blue lights, what would that mean? Here's a hint for you. Over the last 15 years, this has happened 3 times.
Okay.
I'm guessing it's something that hasn't been talked about. Thunderstorms?
They've had thunder and lightning in Boston. Hurricane?
Flashing blue was cloudy.
Flashing blue was cloudy. And what was flashing red?
Was snow.
So, I mean, sleet? This seems like
hail?
Boston. I mean, that seems hard to believe that would only have happened 3 times in Boston over... I think it's something really exotic.
What was that? Molasses flood or whatever?
It's molasses. Right. That's great. Right. It's frozen molasses. Yeah. Right.
Mm. Well, the thing is, it's supposed to be an indicator. Yeah. So if you're at home and you see it, I mean, yeah. I feel like if it's hailing, it's like, well, yeah, I see ice cubes falling from the sky. Mm. I don't really need lights to tell me what it is.
Tornado.
Flood or mud.
I don't think there's tornadoes in that part of the
that's
country.
What I'm saying. I think it's got to be something that's really that's rare. If it only happens, I know what it is. I know what it is. 3 times in the last 15 years, it's the Red Sox win the World Series. It must be. It's not a weather related event at all. That's okay. My guess.
Okay, hold on.
So, do you think you have it? To recap, I asked, what does it mean when the lights on the top of the old Hancock Building are flashing blue and red, with the hint that this has happened 3 times in the last 15 years? The answer? The lights flash blue and red when the Boston Red Sox win the World Series.
You got it!
Did you get it?
All right.
Our Boston listeners probably knew. Thanks for playing, everybody, and I'll see you when I get back.
Gives me a shame that he's like... He was an adult when Carmen Sandiego was a show. Because that was like a perfect clue for a Carmen Sandiego TV show thing. He's got that voice and everything. Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris. And I know you're having fun working and parading your baby around at Penny Arcade Expo. I'm sure that's getting a lot of love. Very exciting news. You know, this is kind of an excuse why we've been a little bit spotty in our recording. It's a very busy month for us. Not only was my laptop stolen, but more importantly, with good news, we have been working on the Good Job Brain book. Yay!
Yeah.
I think we made some social posts, and it's on the blog. But listener, if you're, you know, you don't read any of those things. Well, we're telling you now, we got a book deal from Ulysses Publishing. Our deadline is very soon.
Yeah. It's shaping up.
Yeah, it is.
Good. Yeah.
I've got like 3 pages written. I'm feeling pretty good.
And then I've got the, the next 50 tonight. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, it is very exciting, and it is a lot of work, stressful and fun and exhilarating all at the same time.
I know. This is my first time ever publishing a book. Not for Chris. Chris has published
it's old hat
before.
For Chris.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a professional writer, whatever. But it's very exciting regardless. So the number one question we get is, so what's in the book?
Oh.
How would you answer that?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot here. Well, I think on the cover we promised, I think
this is what we
promised. We're contractually obligated to deliver puzzles, quizzes, and more fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I would say it's maybe a little heavier on the quizzes than the show. The show is a nice mix of quiz and story segments, maybe, but it's a lot of good stuff. There's also stuff that we can't do on the show.
Visual puzzles.
Yep, mm-hmm. Crosswords, a very cool connect the dots that Dana put together. Just a lot of awesome stuff.
And drawings.
Yeah. Yep.
We've been doing a lot of our original drawings as well. Yeah. So, I mean, this is not an insult, but I hope readers and listeners, you guys have this in your bathroom. I think it was designed
for that.
It's designed for a nice bathroom read.
Well said.
Yeah. And for the whole family to enjoy.
Not at the same time.
I don't know.
I'm not going to tell you how to run your family's bathroom. You know, yeah.
So it is available on Amazon for pre-order now.
Yeah. Have to do it.
So we have to finish the book. It's going to be available in September.
Yeah, in time for a holiday gift.
So it's very exciting. All right. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. And it's just you two, Dana versus Colin. Mm. And I have two specific cards. Can be random.
Okay. Right?
Okay.
One is...
One of those doesn't even look like a Trivial Pursuit card.
One is a TV trivia on the go from a listener a while back.
All right.
Let's see.
Okay.
Right hand or left hand?
Left hand.
Left hand. It is Trivial Pursuit Genus 4. Okay. All right, here we go. Blue Wedge for People and Places. What European city decided new names were in order for Foul Lane, Stinky Lane, and Bladder Street?
Wow.
Foul Lane, Stinky Lane, Bladder Street.
Yeah.
European.
London.
Correct. Yeah. It is London.
Bladder Street sounds so British.
It reminds me of Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the street Sweeney Todd was on?
They were on Fleet Street.
Okay.
But just like how
it was named
bleak.
After nouns.
It was bleak.
Bladder Street. Yeah. All right. Pink Wedge for Arts and Entertainment. What debut book did Tom Clancy unleash on the world in 1984?
Oh.
Unleash. Is that a clue?
The first.
Something with a dog.
So the first Tom Clancy novel.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
The first. Well, I mean, man, I mean, if it's based on the movies.
Whoa,
right.
It?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, where was The Hunt for Red October in the sequence? Patriot Games.
Dan, you want to take a guess?
Clear and Present Danger.
Well, that is a tough
one. That's a good guess. That's a good guess.
It is The Hunt for Red October.
Okay, all right.
Was that the first Tom Clancy movie?
I think so. I believe it was.
What year was that? 90?
Oh, we just had 91? This at Pub Quiz the other night.
We got it wrong.
Yeah, we
really?
Did.
And then we were trying to use Chris's encyclopedic knowledge of movies from 1992 to help us figure it out.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Turns out we were 1 year off. It was 1990.
All right. Yellow Wedge for History. Who was dubbed Lenin's left leg during the early stages of Russia's Marxist movement?
Oh, interesting.
Dana?
Trotsky?
That's what I would guess, too.
Incorrect.
Mm, oh. That would have been my guess.
It is Joseph Stalin.
Oh, okay. Oh. Guess that's the other. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
one,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Lenin's left leg.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like a compliment.
Doesn't.
You know, right? It's kind of weird. All right. Brown Wedge for Sports and Nature. Sorry, not Sports and Nature. Science and Nature. Okay. What freshwater mollusks produce red or pink colored pearls?
Freshwater mollusks.
Red or, so like some special kind of oyster then? Or just...
Snails?
Is it just looking for oyster, do you think?
It's not oyster.
Oh, okay.
It is mussels.
Oh, mussels. Okay.
I don't know. I didn't even know they
I didn't know
pearls.
Mussels produced pearls.
Yeah, they totally do. I was looking up pearls the other day for our book. And did you know that the inside of pearls is often parasites, like worms?
Oh.
That's the inside of a natural pearl.
Yeah, because it irritates them, yeah. Right? And then it just
I
grows.
Mean, I knew it was like grit or sand. I didn't know that they could do out. Parasites,
it's
too.
It's almost never sand.
Ah.
They're very good at getting the sand
it's like
out.
A jawbreaker.
Yeah, the parasites burrow a little hole in their shell and get in there.
Ooh.
So sometimes it's a snail that's in there. Sometimes it's a fish. And when they put a hole in a natural pearl, like brown ooze comes out from the decayed parasite. And I was like...
It's what's left of the corpse. Yeah. Gross.
They don't tell you that in the Tiffany's ass.
They don't.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't tell you.
Yeah.
It's a big pearl. It's trying to keep that knowledge.
I wonder if you can x-ray pearls.
I'm sure you can.
See what
I'm sure you can.
Most of the time, it's a worm.
I always thought it was like sand or something. That's
what they
such
like
a horror movie. Yeah.
It's sand. That's
oh
a
my,
nice
it's
story.
Alive. It was alive, and now it's just dead brown ooze.
Yeah.
All right. Next question for Sports and Leisure, Green Wedge. What NFL season was dubbed Jerry and Jimmy's last roundup?
Oh, geez. Okay, so it's a reference
it's a year.
To it's a reference to Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson. So I'm guessing Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
Last, I'm guessing if all of this is correct, they're guessing like the last year that Jimmy Johnson coached the Dallas Cowboys. Man, 94. I don't know.
God, you're so close.
Yeah.
1 year off.
What was it?
93.
93, wow. Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Wow. Still impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still impressive.
All right. I didn't even know who that was a reference to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of J names.
Yeah, a lot of J names, yeah.
Last question. Wild card, orange wedge. What European country's drivers were the first to fill up tanks with a scented gasoline called Fruity Vanilla Super?
What?
Oh, whoa.
A scented gasoline?
Germans.
Fruity Vanilla Super.
Sure, I'll go in with
Germans.
Why not? Are they that silly? Are the Germans frivolous enough to have...
Oh, they're so sciencey. That's
yeah.
Maybe. Just... Or French, because French vanilla.
All right,
it is
I
not
like...
Germany. It
I like,
is France.
I like France. Okay, yeah, nice, yeah. Nice.
I need to read more about this.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to also smell like gasoline. You can't cover it.
You know,
this is just
to get kids interested in gasoline.
Yeah,
it's such a transparent, yeah.
Why did I pick a food flavor? I want to drink it. It sounds so
like, ideally, if your car is in good operating working condition, you don't smell the gas as you're driving. That's a problem.
Wow. Yeah.
All right, good job, brains. So today is episode 181. 181. And it's not very common that we have a palindrome number for our episode number. So I decided to revisit one of my favorite things that we talked about on the show. And I was like, a while ago, I think it was in our music episode. And I was like, well, are there audio palindromes where you say something? Mm-hmm. Because Colin, you had like a whole section on backmasking,
mm-hmm.
playing things in reverse. Mm-hmm. Are there any palindromes that you say... And when you play it in reverse, it sounds like the same thing. We found a couple.
And
before.
What was the name for them? Was there a special name for it?
Audio
palindrome.
Yeah, or
okay.
Phonetic.
Oh, okay.
Palindromes.
Okay.
We did a couple. We did three on the show, and I believe it was New Moon, Work Crew, and Ominous Cinema.
Ah.
And Ominous Cinema did in reverse sound like Ominous.
Right. I remember. Yeah, and you reversed it, right?
Yeah. And the other ones sound kind of alien-y. Like,
yeah. It was like New.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like New Moon. Yeah.
So I have another batch.
Oh, all right.
Palindromes. I want you guys to read out. I wrote on a piece of paper. Read out what your phrase is, and then we'll play it backwards and see if it sounds. Like the original.
Okay.
All right. Or does it sound like crazy alien language? And I have a long one. You're caught. Talk, Roy. Like, I guess a person called
Roy. I feel like
Roy
always turns up when you play something backwards.
Roy? Yeah. All right. Let's play it backwards and let's see how it sounds. You're caught. Talk, Roy. You're caught. Talk, Roy. No.
No.
That's your...
No, that was... Indecipherable.
I think the Yor and Roy maybe does work.
Something.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. The very beginning and the very end. You're right. You're right.
Dana?
Y'all lie. Y'all lie.
Y'all lie.
Like a ghost.
Oh, let me hear that again. Yeah.
Hello.
All right, Colin, you have?
Funny enough.
And then this is a funny enough.
Funny enough. Funny enough. Ooh,
that's pretty good.
It sounds like real words, at least.
Yeah.
Funny enough. Let me hear it again. Funny enough. Oh.
It sounds like good. Fun enough.
That's
good. Not funny.
Yeah, it does.
Enough.
It does. I bet I could get that better with a little practice. Well,
yeah. Say funny.
Funny enough.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's the winner.
That was good.
Yeah.
Woo.
Nice. Funny enough.
Fun enough.
Fun enough. I just want to loop it and turn it into a song.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for participating. That was fun.
All right. Thank you for finding those.
And so today's show, it's kind of weird that we've done 4 years and never did a topic on this. We decided to do a whole episode on Brain. Our show is Good Job Brain.
And we each have never, one.
I mean, we've talked about... Yes.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, there's one for the three of us. Yeah.
We share it. And we've talked about a lot of cognitive stuff before, but never a whole episode dedicated to brains. So today, it's Good Job Brain.
Oh, I will tell you why. The ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before. And then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nuffin. My head all full of stuffin. My heart all full of pain. I would dance and be merry. Life would be a ding-a-dairy if I only had a brain.
So when we settled on the topic of brains. My first thought, I have to admit, was zombies. Like, did I want to do something with zombies and brains, you know? And then it was like, what, if I could get into the science of, well, a zombie wouldn't actually want your brain because...
Wait, really?
I don't know. I'm saying, like, that's kind of my point. It's like, it's just,
you know,
conjecture.
A little off topic, but I do like talking about fake things as if they're real.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And me and my friends, we were debating... How do fairies reproduce? Do fairies reproduce like birds?
You need to write a book because you had mermaids how they reproduce.
Or do they reproduce like, you know, like I would assume fairies are more like insects. They're more like insects.
Do you remember Thumbelina? Like she grew, she was a
flower.
Plant, right?
Yeah.
And then she wasn't a fairy, but the fairies gave her to the people. So maybe that's how, like. From a little pea pod.
And I think that's like more bug-like, how they lay their eggs in a plant or something. I mean, it's all magic, but...
Yeah, fascinating. Go on. No, please, go on. Yes, yes.
Anyways.
Why
would zombies?
We'll explore the topic of zombies and brains, maybe on Brains Part 2. No, the second thing that came to mind, and I immediately decided I want to talk about this, is one of my favorite stories from history is about a man who you may have heard of, a man named Phineas Gage.
Don't
and
know.
It's a great, very
it's like
kind
a
of
Harry Potter name.
Yeah, or like or a like Jules a Verne. Jules Verne, yes.
Sounds like a jeweler's tool.
What kind of gauge is it?
It's a Phineas
it's
gauge.
It's a Phineas gauge.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm glad you guys haven't heard of him. Let me show you a photo here. Actually, this is a daguerreotype, strictly speaking. See, this is a photo of Phineas Gage. Mm. And he's, you know, not a bad looking.
He's holding a gun, is
young
that?
Man. Yeah, what is he holding there? In his hand. It kind of looks like maybe a harpoon or
a
spear of some kind.
That's
maybe.
Like a pointy bow staff. Why is his face winking? All weird?
His face is a little weird. He's not winking. His left eye is actually stitched shut.
Whoa.
In an accident that he had.
You know, with a big weapon. He's an attractive person overall. I would say objectively he looks like
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
He looks like an actor.
He does. It almost looks like in a movie where they got an actor to sit for the photo of the character.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Phineas Gage. In the 1840s, he made his living as a foreman on a blasting crew. Okay. So like with using gunpowder to blast away rocks.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For like railways and things like that. And as a kid, I remember seeing a video reenactment of his life and the accident that cost him the vision in his eye. And what happened to Phineas Gage is that he had... The thing that he's holding there, which is a large metal rod, flew completely in one side and out the other side of his head.
Oh, my God. Why is he posing with it?
Well, look, Karen, hey, man, if something flew through your head and you lived to tell about it, Wouldn't you want to kind of carry it around as a trophy?
So.
Yeah. Wow. So this is one of my all-time favorite stories. He is a trivia legend. I first heard about him, I think, through Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Okay.
It was one of these really super fantastic kind of things. I have here some gruesome illustrations of Phineas Gage's skull, which, of course, was examined after he passed away. There is a hole right through the skull where the rod passed.
And he survived.
So let me tell you about what happened. So as I say, he was a foreman on a blasting crew, and in the 1840s, he and his crew were clearing some rock away. They were working in Vermont, and he was using what's called, it looks like, as I say, it looks like a javelin almost. It's a long metal rod. It's called a tamping iron, to tamp down something. And the way they would blast away rock is they would drill a hole into the rock, put some powder in, tamp down the powder, put in like a filling agent, like some earth or clay or sand, something like that, tamp it down a little bit more, clear the people out of the way, and then blow the rock.
That's what they do to whales.
That's
the dead whales.
Right. So the details of what led up to the accident are a little unclear, but he had his partner. They were drilling a hole in the rock, putting in the blasting powder. He was tamping down the powder, and he turned away to look or talk to someone else at the crew, and it gets a little hazy from here. But what happened next was the powder went off, possibly prematurely, possibly there was a spark in there, while the tamping rod was still in the hole, and while Phineas Gage was standing directly in front of it. And the blast shot the rod directly back out of the hole, directly up under his chin, up through the top of his head, and out the other side, landing good distance away.
It didn't get stuck in there. It just cleanly, went through his head.
He sat on the ground. They say he kind of just twitched a little bit, sat up, was by all accounts conscious.
Yeah.
He could talk, but he was acting a little funny, So his entire work crew was like, oh my God, this guy just had a spike blasted through his head, through his brain, blood everywhere, little bits of brain matter everywhere. But he was talking and alive, So they load him up on the cart and they bring him in to get medical attention, the best medical attention they can at the time.
So what year was
this? This was 1848.
Okay, so 1848. It's not like modern medicine is not that. No.
It's it's like right in the period when the medicine was modern enough to save his life.
Okay,
but we're talking like Civil War era medicine, basically.
Germs, right?
Right. That's a great question, Dana. Yeah. I mean, the germs alone. It's amazing that this guy lived after this, like not just in the moments after, but in the weeks and months and some years after. So they loaded him up on the cart, took him a mile back into town where they got, Dr. Kane looked at him and basically is like, holy crap, son, you got a hole in your head. Yeah.
Because if I were a doctor, I'd be like, I've never seen this. What do I do?
Right. And so now this is where, so remember I told you I had seen a video reenactment of this when I was a kid. So at this point in the video reenactment, the doctor, this is like, I was just like rapt as a child. The doctor puts his hand under Gage's chin, puts his other hand in the top of his head and can reach his head and touch his fingers together.
Why would he do that?
Yeah.
What a bad doctor.
It's like the moment he dies.
Right. As I say, he could talk, he could walk. He did lose vision in his left eye.
Okay.
Some damage. It appears by all accounts, I mean, most physicians today, they look at the damage and they're like, oh, his frontal lobes were just totally destroyed. Okay. Just obliterated. Uh-huh. But, that part of the brain isn't responsible for a lot of the types of sort of functions that they were testing him for. So you could kind of look at him and be like, okay, yeah, he's generally okay after this, because he can walk and talk and, remembers his name and things like that. So the story that I was always taught was that, like, right from the get-go, things were different. He was just like, oh, he isn't the same Phineas anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I had heard that there was stories like he reverted almost to, like, an animalistic state. You know, people were like, oh, it's severed the part of his brain that made him, you know,
man.
A civilized man.
Okay.
Yeah. In recent years, more recent historians have shed a lot of light that that probably was not true. That, you know, again, he did have his frontal lobes just shattered. So it is going to change him a little bit, but that the thinking now is there's probably, you know, given an amazing turn of events and enough luck that he couldn't sort of resume a functional life after and not actually be just this sort of half man beast. And indeed, you look at the man in that the photo that I showed you guys, seemed like a perfectly respectable guy, except for the weird habit of carrying around a metal spike that flew through his head and having his eyes sewn shut. There was a great article on Slate.com a couple years ago by Sam Keen, who Karen wrote the Disappearing Spoon.
Yeah. And other great historical science books.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, even if you think you've heard about Phineas Gage before, I encourage you to go find this article. It's a really interesting read about what has happened to the legend of him in the later years. And I'll make a very long story short for you guys, which is that, you know, historians today have made any number of attempts to kind of reconstruct the exact path that the rod took through his skull. You know, and I'll show you here a photo really quickly.
Okay.
Is it growth? Oh, okay. It's like,
So here's his skull, which is currently in the Harvard Medical School repositories. And you can see, I mean, there's a hole in the guy's skull. Yeah. So they've tried to do, like, you know, computer reconstructions and you know, we're never going to know. We're never going to know exactly what part of his brain was destroyed, not just by the rod, but by bone fragments and whatever chunks of rock, the gunpowder, you know, whatever infections he may have had, sticking their hands down there. Doctor is like
bowling ball.
Probably didn't.
Yeah, he's like, if you cough up an engagement ring, no. So Sam Keen, like, doing some really good research here, basically found out that in his later years, Gage, you know, he recovered enough to live a reasonable life. He moved to Chile. He became a coach driver, you know. And I mean, like, his point is that somebody who was reduced to sort of a weird quasi-human state would not be able to go and take on a new life
and
drive a coach and do things like that. Yeah. He did eventually. I mean, he didn't live long. He was only in his 30s when he died. And he died actually not far from here in San Francisco, California.
Oh.
Yeah, so even though he's...
From what, do we know?
He had a seizure in 1860. You know, entirely possible the seizures were related to the accident. Yeah. But, I mean, he lived 12 years after a spike flying through his brain with 1848 medical technology.
And I doubt they plugged it up.
Oh, man, there are some crazy stories about what he would do. Like, so apparently, it healed over well enough. I mean, they had to they had to remove a lot of debris, you know, to clean him up. I'm trying to keep this as un-stomach turning as I can. But apparently, like, almost as like a party trick or a novelty, like in his later years, like you could part his head and you could see like his scalp pulsating like below, because there was no bone right there. Like, it was just flesh and skin. Yeah.
Wow.
An interesting party trick, to be sure.
Sure.
Yeah. And like, if you walk into a party and you're carrying a metal rod, you know, you're going to ask that guy, hey, what's up with the metal rod, buddy?
It's protection.
So,
he's peacocking.
Shows you the way. He's like, he needs some attention.
He's like the ultimate definition of, hey, man, walk it off. When he was getting treated at the doctor's, like, he was telling him, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I want to get back out to the blast site as soon as possible.
Like, no.
No, son, you're going to be off the job for a few weeks at least.
Yeah. Wow. So almost on the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to brains, I wanted to talk about photographic memories. Like, when I was a kid, I was really into the idea of having a photographic
memory.
Me too. Like, I wanted to practice.
Me too.
You could look at a self-selected group, you guys.
Probably. You could look at a page and, like, just look at it, and then you can remember every word that's on the page and how it's arranged exactly. And, I mean, I don't have a photographic memory. Could you guys do it?
No. But I was just like, I was fascinated with the idea.
I have a very good memory. Like, visual memory, yes. But I wouldn't say it's photographic.
No.
Well, I'm hoping you're going to get here. But, like, when I was a kid, I totally believed it was real. And as I got older, I had less and less belief in it. So all right,
let me tell you about photographic.
Okay,
stars.
All right.
Apparently, there's only been one person in the world who has been who has claimed to have a genuine photographic memory.
Okay.
There was a professor at Harvard in the 70s, late 60s, 70s, named Charles Strohmeyer III, and he was really interested in memories and finding somebody with a photographic memory. And there was a teacher there, an art teacher, that he called Elizabeth in his research, and she had a photographic memory. Like, she could recall poems and other languages that she didn't understand and be able to, like, write them. She could...
That's a good test.
She could recall images perfectly and draw them.
Whoa.
She could. So his test, though, he took stereographic images, which are images made up of little dots, and you look at it with your left eye, you look at it with your right, and it kind of looks 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he would show her with one eye one of the images, then wait a period of time, a few minutes, show her the other one. She could remember the dots from the first image, 10,000 dots. From the first image.
Oh, my God.
And from the second image.
Interesting.
And put it together.
Really?
And know what the 3D object is. And when you look at it by itself, it's just dots. You cannot read it. There's 10,000 of them.
She couldn't, like, take a shortcut and...
No.
Wow.
And so he tried, like, oh, we'll wait a day between them. We'll show one eye, one of them, wait a day, show that she could remember it and do the 3D. They got up to, like, 1,000,000 dots in 4 hours, like, show a 1,000,000 dot image. He, like, rotated them sometimes, and she would know that it was rotated and turn her head and see it.
Whoa.
Sounds too good to be true,
surreal,
right?
Person.
Too good to be true. So people were like, that's fascinating. Can we meet her? He married her and never let anyone interview her. Again, she never was researched again. He published this article
about her. I'm going to say that sounds a little fishy.
I mean,
what? Really?
Canadian supermodel.
Well, like, yeah, he published it in Nature. I believe she existed. Nobody says that
okay.
Elizabeth
okay.
is not somebody that he married. He did marry her,
yeah.
But then no one was ever allowed to test her again. And she is the only one they have ever found in the world. And they've done newspaper things where millions of people have tried. Like, no one else has ever had this superpower to do this.
The fact that they won't let other researchers test her, that's like the biggest red flag for me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because it's like then you make money off of, like, going on speaking tours and, you know, going to different universities and holding symposiums and stuff. And that didn't happen. I mean, that's...
People would be able to learn so much from her because the human brain doesn't work that way. Like, the way we look at photographs is different.
It's impressionistic.
From that.
Like, we don't, like,
There's a lot of memory. There is such a thing as eidetic memory.
Right.
And, like, if you Google photographic memory on Wikipedia, it just redirects you to eidetic memory.
Right, right.
Which is not photographic memory.
Oh, I was always told those were the same thing.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's the closest humans have to photographic memory, but it's not actually.
Oh, but eidetic memory is real.
It is real, real. Basically, pre-adolescent children have it, like 6 to 12 are mostly the people who have it. And it's not a lot. It's very few children. Maybe one or two adults have ever had it, something like that.
Really?
Like, it's usually kids that
and how
have
do they
it.
How do they define eidetic?
Yeah, what is it?
So it's basically, the way they test for it is you are looking at an easel. They put a picture on the easel. You look at it for 30 seconds. They take the picture away, and then you're recalling the picture that was there. The problem is they don't have perfect recall of the image when they're doing that. And if they blink or if you, like, distract them a bit, it'll go away and they won't be able to remember it at all. And it's like they just took a snapshot in their brain maybe for a moment of what it was. It's not photographic because it's not precise and it doesn't last forever. And
got it.
It's not like Elizabeth with her, you know, 24 hours memorizing
10,000 dots.
No. There's also a thing called hyperthymesia, which is also known as highly superior autobiographical memory.
Hmm.
So people remember everything that has happened to them in their lives.
Okay, I've read about people who claim to have this experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there was a woman who had that, and she was asked about, like, the day that the MASH finale aired, and she knew exactly what day.
Wow.
And she could remember the weather. There's some thought that maybe this is just like a part of an obsessive compulsive memory. Just like you just remember everything. You're always going over it with yourself and reminding yourself.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, but there are some people who have amazing memories. That's the other thing I've unearthed with this. There's the World Memory Championships.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, those. Yeah. And those are, I mean, you put you up on stage and you don't know what they're going to tell you, no. Right? Yeah.
So last year...
It's like the memory games.
Yeah, it is the memory. So those people use mnemonics. Like they have... That's different from photographic memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a memory. Ways. It's like Sherlock or something. Yeah. Like they're making a picture of it. There are books about how to develop your memory and become much better at it. Last year, an American won the World Memory Championships.
Ooh. USA.
That's right. I was going to bring it. So Alex Mullen had 1 hour to memorize as many numbers as he could. He got 3,029 digits.
Jeez. Oh my.
After staring at it for an hour.
That's bananas.
He could recall.
Yeah, you're just wired differently.
Yeah, you figured out how to organize your brain in such a way that you can.
That's just amazing.
They have all sorts of things like spoken numbers, like you hear them and then you have to say them back, or cards, like you have to remember the order cards come out and people get into the thousands or. It's like they're athletes. They call them memory athletes.
Oh, that's cool, because they are. It is memory games. Actually, I saw because we love talking about Rubik's Cube and speed cubing.
Yeah.
There's another mode of competition. They give you, and I saw a video of a kid, they give you a scrambled Rubik's Cube, and you look at it, and then for like maybe like 2 minutes, and then when you're ready, you put blindfolds on and you basically solve the cube.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. Right, yeah.
That's crazy. And it's like, because you can't feel the colors, you just have to memorize what move. Oh my goodness.
There was stuff where they thought expert chess players maybe had photographic memories because they could remember every move that happened in the game.
Hmm.
But then they were like, well, what if we make it move in patterns that don't match the rules of the game? And they couldn't do it.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Yeah,
interesting.
So it's like it
was a domain-specific knowledge.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college who, cleaning out the house, I think, that they lived in, they found an old, like, improve your memory kit or something from the 70s. And so they're on a lark. He's like, yeah, I'm going to try this. Yeah. Listen, all I remember is that one of the techniques they had, and, you know, it was fairly reasonable stuff. It was just, it's a skill. You have to learn techniques. So, like, the technique I remember they had was the house technique. So you imagine you were trying to remember, I don't know, a list of 30 things. So you set yourself up in a house that you know.
Memory palace.
So you go into a room that's on the wall, it's on this, same kind of thing.
And you have to practice. Like,
you do have to practice.
To visit your house.
Like an athlete, you have to put in the time training.
There's a book by another Slate author named Joshua Foer, Foer. Mm. It's called Moonwalking with Einstein.
With Einstein, yeah. Mm.
And that was his mnemonic for remembering cards, because he was imagining like a diamond gloves and a penny loafers. And
it's everyone's different. Every mnemonic is different. All right. Well, I'm happy to hear that, like,
it's photographic. That you're deficient.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, I guess I was wasting time as a kid, but
it sounds so glamorous.
It does.
Photographic memory.
Oh, like in like spy movies or something like that, you know, it's be like, oh, she saw the map once and it's in her head.
The idea that you can basically, your head is like a camera and you can store pictures at any given moment.
It's so appealing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
They also found, though, that people who had like eidetic memories or whatever, like, are not more intelligent than normal people. Like, it doesn't have to do with your, like, synthesizing the information. You can just recall it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, you don't feel so bad. Yeah,
it's like, you know, Scrabble players, it's not like they know Scrabble
definition
players. Is, yeah, they don't know the definition.
A lot of them don't even speak English.
Yeah, they just memorize all the words.
Yeah.
Very cool. So when we talk about brain, the first thing that came to mind was not zombies, but I was scarred for life as a kid. Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom.
The monkey brains.
There is a scene where they're eating dinner. I believe they're in some exotic local...
Pankot Palace.
Okay, yeah. Some exotic place with exotic food. And there was a food where there's like a... They serve snakes and they open up the snakes. A bunch of baby snakes come out. They eat it. There's like a soup with a goat eyeball that floated
so
to the top.
Gross.
I forgot all of these.
Yeah.
Really?
It was just like one after the other.
The one thing.
The one thing that just when I think about brains, I just think of... as dessert in the movie. Yeah. It was chilled monkey brain. And it was like a head of, I mean, obviously now when you watch the movie, you're like, oh, that is so fake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like a monkey head. And then you open up the little scalp and there's like,
the skull cap comes off.
Yeah. And you know, and like, I remember like in the movie, it made like a little like sound too. Yeah, it was like, ah, God, no, I can't.
Jelly. And then like, I realized there's so many different movies talking about the idea of eating monkey brains. There's another Clue. Mm. It was a plot device in the movie Clue with Tim Curry where they talk about,
I forgot about that.
Eating monkey brains in DC because that's like a Cantonese, a Hong Kong delicacy. So I was like, so here's the thing. I believe people do eat monkey brains because a lot of us eat animals and you eat, you know, a lot of people like a pig, you eat all of the animals, yeah, including the organs and mm-hmm, you know, and brain.
Tongue. I just believe that humans have eaten every part of every animal, yeah, at some point
for survival. Right. And so I decide to look into eating. Is that a real dish?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna guess yes, but not in the way that it was shown in Indiana Jones.
Yes, okay. You are correct. There are a lot of tribal diets that consist of eating an animal, and that includes eating the brain.
All of it.
Right,
yeah.
Eating all of it. And this is not just in Asia, this is not in the Middle East, also in Africa, just different, because mm-hmm, that's what they need to eat to survive.
High protein.
Yeah, hunter, gatherer, yeah, okay, high in fat. There is no written document that any restaurant has served a dish,
okay,
with monkey brains.
Okay.
There isn't, you know, there might be like folklore that gets passed down, a lot of like online chain email, you know, urban legends that, you know, the Chinese do this, and it's like a really gruesome operation where they take a live monkey and then the guests strap the monkey down and you like beat the monkey with a hammer.
You're like,
and
well, you're like, who would do this? Like,
this is not a real recipe, you know, like, yeah, excessive. So yeah, that is a very, very widespread, you know, this coupled with movies and depiction and Indiana Jones are like, oh, this must happen somewhere. But no, that seems like that's an urban legend. And yes, there may be cultures that eat it, but there's no
it's not
written
like a
document.
It's not a ritualized delicacy.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. Like we talked about the ortolan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's not. Yeah. Ortolan is, you know, people still practice it. There's documentation on it.
That one seems fake, though.
The ortolan almost seems fake because it was so ritualistic. I did find this, and it's so interesting because it's in the Chinese culture, and there is a Chinese, like, a phrase that we use to describe a really great smorgasbord, like a really impressive array of food. Okay. That's why we say that party had a real, put out a lot of stuff, like a buffet line, like a feast. However, I did not know that this is referencing a real feast. Specifically, this is called the Manchurian Han Imperial Feast. In Chinese history, and this is like in the Qing Dynasty, so it's the 1700s, there was one legendary feast that happened over the course of 3 days.
Okay.
And it was to celebrate, at that time, China was ruled by the Manchurians from the north. And there's also the Han Chinese, which is another people group in China. And so the emperor, Kangxi, he thought, you know, in order to consolidate like the North and South China, the different powers, and bring everyone together, and it was his 66th birthday, he decided to do this elaborate, legendary Chinese feast for his officials, for some of the people in court, and it is just so extravagant. His thought was, let's highlight all the different, I mean, China's a big country. There's a lot of tribal groups, a lot of ethnic groups.
It's almost like a world's fair rolled into a feast.
That's what I put it. It's the world's feast of Chinese banquet. It highlighted different cultures' cooking methods, different schools of cooking. And there were like 300 dishes.
I'm feeling inspired.
I'm
hungry.
Yeah. This is making me real hungry.
The meal itself, there were like 300 dishes. And then they had different like facets too. So there's like the eight treasures is a very common Chinese saying, right? Eight treasures this, eight treasures that. There's eight treasures of the mountain, eight treasures of the sea, eight treasures of the, you know, blah. And very exotic, weird animal meats used in this. So like shark fin.
Okay.
And even going crazier, it has been validated. It's very poetic. It's called snowy palm. And I've heard about it in Chinese.
What is that?
It's a bear claw.
Oh.
Because it's gelatinous.
What?
Like you eat the bear paw. It's like gelatinous. It's kind of like pig's feet.
Wow.
One of them supposedly is a camel hump. You know, okay. They cook camel hump because sure. They're like the more desert.
Because they can. Because they can.
So, I mean, this is one of the dishes called for monkey brains.
Okay.
And it's actually Jing Yan Huo Nao, which means golden eye fire brain. very poetic.
Not to oversell it.
You know, some say that this could be monkey brain. Some say that it could be goat brain. It could be some other animal's brain. But you know, some historians say that they used monkey brain. And this is probably the only time in actual official records that said that at this kind of restaurant-y feast that this was served.
Okay.
Not like a tribe trying to survive and eating, you know, like in terms of like a dish that is presented in a ritualistic way.
Okay.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, because of the Cultural Revolution, a lot of old books, historical books and literature got burned and got destroyed.
Right, of course.
So this legendary feast, it's almost passed on, you know, kind of by story, you know, hearsay. Yeah, right. And it used to be written down. There used to be like ingredients or talking about the dishes, but we don't have like those records anymore. And so now that whole feast has just kind of boiled down to our vocabulary as calling something a real nice feast. But really, it's this legendary of epic proportions that, you know, served weird things. You know, not to say that it was the feast that did it, but like that Emperor Kangxi, he was one of China's most respected and longest reigning emperors.
Yeah.
And maybe his whole World's Fair feast kind of worked out.
I could totally see, and that also
reuniting
like
with
trickling
food,
down into Indiana Jones hundreds of years later.
I heard this culture did this and must be monkey brains.
I
and
can see that.
If you're gonna have monkey brains, gotta serve it in a head. There was an Italian softcore porno movie that had like a very exaggerated scene that is that urban legend of like, oh, there's a live monkey at a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
A hammer.
I was wondering where you're going with this. Yeah.
What part of the monkey are they serving for dinner?
Wow.
And so that may be the source of a lot of the urban legend. It came from that made up scene in the movie. Even the director said that was all fake.
Got it.
Right? Yeah. Like, it was foam hammers. It was just like a kind of like a weird scene people made up and somehow that trickled into like, oh, this happened for real, you know. Journey into monkey brains.
I'm happy to hear that it is most likely not a real thing. I think I kind of always suspected that, but yeah,
eating animal brains is not a
that happens
it
really
happens.
Happens
it does
yeah.
It does.
Actually, for a quick story, one of my first projects when I became a art director at GamePro, I had to do this photo shoot for a story, and it's like the impact on brains from video games. And so our photo shoot was like, let's get some fake brains and we'll have controllers in them. And we couldn't find fake brains, so I was like, oh, let's see if we can find real brains. And like, I went to the Chinese market and they sold pig brains.
Yeah,
like by the bag.
Probably fairly cheap, I would imagine.
That was such a good photo. That was a good layout.
That was a good layout. Yeah,
cool.
Very visceral.
Have it still, you could post it on the website.
Oh,
it's really good. Yeah.
So that's my adventure down in monkey brain, chilled monkey brain. It still haunts me to this day.
Yeah, me too.
That's so scary.
For me, it's the snakes, but
move.
That scene was just seared in my memory as a kid.
It was the skull cap coming off.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't sure. You're like, oh, those are monkey heads. And then the top of the head just comes off so perfectly.
Yeah.
And the brain's there.
Yeah.
You're like,
all right, woo, what a weird episode, you guys. So that's our episode on brains. Really went in three different directions.
We covered
kind of surprise.
All the corners of the globe too.
Hope you learned a lot of stuff about memory, about chilled monkey brains, and about Phineas Gage and his brain hole. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.